This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 25th of February 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. For our weekly literary discussion today, we'll be leafing through the pages of a moving new book that details the transition from doctor to patient as neurosurgeon Paul Kalanithi is diagnosed with terminal cancer in When Breath Becomes Air. And we'll be mulling over two new novels as well, psycho-thriller The Stopped Heart by Julie Myerson and a debut by Holly Muller called My Own Dear Brother, a coming-of-age story set in Nazi-controlled Austria. And joining me in the studio to guide me through all three is Charmaine Lovegrove, founder of Dialogue Scouting, book-to-screen consultancy. Stay tuned, that's all to come on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. When Breath Becomes Air is a memoir by Paul Kalanithi, a young neurosurgeon facing terminal cancer and questioning what makes life worth living. Sadly, Kalanithi died before the book was published. He wrote it as he completed his medical training, but after he had been diagnosed with lung cancer. Charmaine, welcome to the show. This sounds like such a moving read. Is it more a reflection on life, do you think, or a rumination on the nature of death?
You know, I think it's explaining to us essentially what it's like to be someone that goes from treating patients and treating people that are dying with very, very complex neurological disorders to then becoming a patient yourself. And it's not something that many people will ever go through, but many of us will become sick at some point in our lives. And I think to really have that sort of in-depth knowledge and sort of cultural awareness and sort of philosophical thought from Dr. Kalanithi is just so inspiring. And you know, you're reading it in a first person, so you keep thinking that he's here and that he's just sort of telling you a story. And I mean, he writes so well. He read English at Stanford and then he became a doctor at Cambridge and studied at Yale School of Medicine. And so the sort of love for literature and love for science is kind of, you know, you really feel it from his words.
I mean, he writes quite interestingly about language. You said that he's kind of he studied literature. He sort of writes about how language makes us human, but he also comes at it from a kind of neurological point of view. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that it's not so much just about the language. It's also about like philosophy and ethics and morality. And I think we learn so much about what it takes to be a doctor and to, you know, to be clever and interested and kind of giving enough to be a doctor. And then in loving language, he kind of has a generosity of words and you just feel this immense warmth and generosity from this man. And it just feels just, you know, such a terrible shame that he died. And you know, his life towards the end of the book, you know, you just feel this like depth of like the philosophy, the complexities, the issues around death and what it's like to know that you're dying whilst you're living, which sounds very suffocating. And it was really enlightening to have him put pen to paper in this way.
When you look at the language, do you think, I mean, does it come across as quite emotional or is it very spare? I mean, I'm just interested in the idea of a kind of a doctor and that clinical mind being put into words. Is it very emotional or does he treat it quite sort of,
yeah? Well, the book is in essentially two parts. And so in the first part, In a Perfect Health, I Begin, it is a lot more sort of clinical. It's a lot more him as a doctor, and you know, you really feel that his the essence of how he feels takes his work seriously, and that he's coming to the end of his like 11 years of practice and is about to make it in a field that is one of the toughest areas of medicine that we have, which is neuroscience. And then the second part two, Cease Not Until Death, then that's when you really get like much more of like the human side of him. And so you really get a feeling of his prowess as a writer who is able to be a doctor, be a patient, but above all be a writer. And so you do get this sort of duality of culture from him, from his language of the book.
And do you know if he intended for this book to be released after he died, or did he hope to see the release of the book? I mean, When was it actually finished?
So as far as I know, he died on the 9th of March 2015. And there had been, you know, the book essentially came from the fact that there'd been sort of millions of hits from international press, from Washington Post, from the New York Times and the Guardian. So, you know, there's a lot of really big international news presses that had picked up on his story. And so there's millions of hits. And I think that it seems as though he was writing articles. And so it was sort of a collection of his articles. And then he sort of hoped that it would be a book. But I think that in the end, he wasn't hoping for anything other than his life to be. And he had a daughter. His wife is also a doctor, Lucy, and they had a daughter called Katie. And I think that, you know, that I think if anything, the book is for her to have an understanding of her father. And they chose to have her knowing that he was going to die, which is an incredibly brave and very difficult thing to do. So I think the focus was on having something for her, and then it, you know, given the interest that millions of people had all over the world in his story, that it was a no-brainer that it would become a book.
I mean, one of the more moving passages is when he's describing the birth of his daughter, when he's kind of incredibly frail, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's not something that I would wish upon anybody, but the idea that he would take that life and be so positive about what his daughter meant to him. You know, he was going to a appointment with his mother at the time that his daughter was born. So he wasn't actually physically there. But when he meets her and he holds her, then he understands. He has a new essence to his life, and the joy that she brings is almost a distraction, a much needed distraction from his death. And I think his and his family will always be grateful for her. She was a very, very special gift.
When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi is out now, published by Bodley Head. We're going to move on now to the first of two novels we're talking about today. The Stopped Heart is the 10th book by British author Julie Myerson. Here we meet Mary, who is trying to rebuild her life after the devastating death of her two children. However, she is soon thrown into disarray when a red-haired stranger is found after a storm. Charmaine, this all sounds a little mysterious. Enlighten us as to how the story unfolds from there.
It's like a contemporary story with Mary, and who is a publicist, and her husband, Graham. And it's you know, the most awful thing has happened to them. Their two daughters have been killed. And it's just like every parent's nightmare. And so we meet them in rural Suffolk, where they've moved because they've tried to get away from the headlines and the press and the life that they were leading before when their children were alive. And then we also meet Eliza, who has also lived in that house, but 100 years before in Victorian England. And these two kind of families, Eliza and her family and Mary and Graham, who have inhabited this house, both of them over time have met a sort of mysterious man who refuses to leave. And the novel is woven in between the two voices and the narrative structure, that sometimes you're not sure which story we're following and who's coming next. And so that kind of really evokes this idea that, you know, these two worlds are inseparable, and that it gives you the perspective that we are, we're trying to find out what this sort of haunting tragedy that overlays this house and then these two families, and in from very, very separate times.
How successful do you think it is, this interweaving of the two narratives? I mean, do you get a sense, you said that sometimes it's difficult to judge, but are they different voices? How does it kind of work?
Yeah, so they are different voices, but in order, you know, I think a skill that Myerson and other writers that who use this device, and the skill is almost making these voices slightly opaque so that you're not sure whose world you're entering. And, you know, that's done seamlessly. So there's just a paragraph break, for example, but there aren't other devices that we would normally see, such as a chapter break, to display that it is a new voice. So I think that it's an incredibly difficult thing to do. I've read a lot of books where this has been done, and I think that this has been done really well. And I think it's because what she's managed to do in this is allow the thriller aspect and the sheer terror of death and destruction of a family to reign supreme in the novel, and the sort of the haunting and the house. I think allowing that to kind of to be the sort of the top layer of the book, that you're always, and the suspense, so you're always feeling the suspense, which means that, you know, you're not really sort of focusing on exactly whose voice and when, you're actually just feeling quite scared quite a lot of the time.
Okay, that sounds good. I mean, I guess with a lot of books that try this kind of device, there isn't much space for psychological development, and as you say, it kind of gets dominated by the plot. Do you feel that we kind of experience Mary's disarray? I mean, do we get an insight into her psychological state in this book?
Absolutely, and there's a lot of flashbacks, there's a lot of graphic descriptions. You see how Mary is sort of dealing with her life before, and the sort of the difference in how she's dealing with it now. You know, this book is filled of the ghosts of dead children, and, you know, and hints of ghosts of the future as well. And I think that in doing that, in using that sort of contemporary and historical detail to sort of as another layering device, then you do get a very rounded story. But ultimately, you're really trying to understand like the evil that you can't see, and you're trying to understand it from the perspective of these two women, Mary and Eliza, who have very different lives, and their only sort of what's shared between them is this house.
The Stopped Heart by Julie Myerson is out now, published by Jonathan Cape. We're going to end the show today with another novel, this time a debut, My Own Dear Brother by Holly Muller. Muller was born in Wales, but her father was Austrian, and it's her father's country that serves as the setting here. It's 1944, when we first meet our protagonist, 13-year-old Ursula Hildesheim. How does the plot play out from then on, Charmaine?
So we meet Ursula, and she's living in a village called Felddorf, and she has a friend called Sochi, and she has a brother called Anton. And essentially, they're living in quite a sort of idyllic Austrian village, and they have an idyllic lifestyle.
This in spite of the fact that the Nazis are occupying the country.
Absolutely. And then over kind of quite quickly, there's a local concentration camp, and then some Russian prisoners escape. The mother starts to have an affair with a married man. Her friend goes missing, and quite quickly, Ursula's life begins to unfurl, and you start seeing like the terror of war from this this 13-year-old's eyes. And, you know, Ursula really finds herself alone. She's having to grow accustomed to her life as a child by herself without her mother's support. Her brothers sort of become part of like the Hitler Youth movement, and, you know, that's really scary for her because she'd always really adored him. And, you know, suddenly she's having to deal with huge issues of like rape and suffering. And, you know, what you're really getting at with her is like her own human, like, what can this one girl, this child, deal with? How much can she deal with? And I think it's a really interesting story to kind of look at now, especially as we're looking, you know, there's a lot of talk about what's happening in Syria and what's happening with children. And you suddenly realise, you know, for children to see the unthinkable, then that has a consequence on what happens in our future and how those children move into the future. And this is really what you're understanding with her, Ursula. You know, where is she going to be able to go with her life, given what she's seen?
Right. I mean, yeah, let's talk about Ursula then. I mean, she's obviously at that kind of typical age of the coming of age novel. She's 13 years old. How does she end up dealing with the with all this stuff that's being thrown at her? Do you feel like she overcomes it, or is she a little bit broken by the end?
I feel as though she's really broken, but she's tried to remain resolutely positive because she understands that all she will ever have is herself, and that somehow she has to be able to get out of this situation. And she understands that she is only 13 years old, and that, you know, she has, if she makes the right choices and does the right thing, then she will have to live with those choices. And so she shows incredible courage despite the cruelty that's surrounding her. And historically, we're going through a journey of like Austria being ruled by Nazi Germany and then being taken over by Soviet Russia. And so, you know, the complexities of even like language and culture and the changes, and it's all happening so quickly for her, and she's having to grow up, but at the same time, you know, I think her voice is resolutely of a child. And I think that that's really powerful.
As I mentioned, Müller, who's the Holly Müller, who's the novelist here, her grandfather had been in the German army and had supported the Nazis. Do you get the sense here that Müller is kind of exploring her own Austrian heritage here and kind of coming to terms with that difficult heritage?
I think that every writer, you know, when they're writing about a history and a culture that we don't really know about, is always trying to do that. And she is half Austrian. It is this book is assiduously researched, and obviously she's had to look into the depths of her family culture and life, and to really understand what Ursula would have gone through. And I imagine it was a very, very painful experience, but what a great novel to have come out of it.
My Own Dear Brother by Holly Müller is out now, published by Bloomsbury Circus. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Charmaine Lovegrove. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow when Karen Krizanovich will join us in the studio to talk about this week's film releases and, of course, this weekend's Oscars ceremony. But for now, thank you very much for listening and goodbye.